Srila Prabhupada Ki, Sri Bhakti Vaibhava Ki, Grantaraj, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Giriraj, Maharaj Ki, Jayanitai Gopremanandi.
So, what we discussed in our previous class.
A candidate for spiritual advancement must be non-violent, must be pushed to have a great experience.
Any other points?
Simple living and hygiene.
What about it?
Sleeping and talking and the way we live.
Anything else?
As Prabhupada Maharaj teaches by example, how to receive the guests, or the guests of Prabhupada Maharaj, and the relations are given, that one has to give water for washing the legs, and offer seeds, and to follow to the rest. And if it's not possible, ask him to sit down. That's not possible. Speech like this will come with 3 words. And if that's also not possible, just do a voice and just come with your family. Friends, I think. That's where you feel the gift.
Good.
Yep. Seeing in everyone Krishna. And so you see Krishna everywhere, and you're always Krishna consciousness. Okay. And Krishna. Inside Krishna.
Anything else?
Tolerance and compassion. One should learn to tolerate the pain that comes from the material body. At the same time, one should have compassion for the people who are suffering.
Good point.
Yep. And sense and mind control are very important.
Anything else?
If you are not getting enough taste in Krishna consciousness, you should surrender even more.
Any other points?
The pastimes of the Lord should be the ornament for the years.
That's good.
And when remembrance is lost, all is lost. The lost soul to your consciousness.
One should not deviate from original consciousness.
Anything else?
Srila Prabhupada actually makes a point that we should never criticize other religions, even though they are practicing in the mode of ignorance. We should respect them.
Surrender 100% so that you have a taste from the spiritual center.
By practicing Krishna consciousness, one develops detachment from the material body. And there are 5 types of attachment to the material body.
So the Kumaras are giving their transcendental instructions to Prithu Maharaj about how to essentially practice bhakti and to transcend the material energy. Tonight we'll continue in verses 33 to 40 and we'll hear specifically the Kumaras giving dhyana or knowledge to Prithu Maharaj about how to differentiate between matter and spirit and become fully liberated from the material energy. So, any other points?
We should not criticize other religions. I'm talking about from a very practical point of view. If the discussion starts and why we do and how we do and why we do and why you do. So ultimately the point has to be established about why it is the way we do. And again, if the person from the other religion also puts the point, it will be very difficult to state the point about that what we are following is a superset rather than a subset. And that's where the problem starts. So you can be diplomatic and just come out of the conversation, or you should make a point to make a healthy discussion and lose few people there. Because without establishing that this is the best way, we haven't talked to them. We are just trying to please them.
Yeah, but you don't have to necessarily try to convince them that this is the best way. Because what does he think about his religion? Right? Every practitioner of every religion thinks that their religion is the best way. Then if you just enter in on that level, then it'll be very difficult for people to accept what you have to say. So you're better off not trying to convince people on that level. That this is the best. Just present what it is, and then if they choose it, they choose it. Most likely they won't choose it anyways.
On that point, can we not say that, never say that we are the best process, but we have the best process. There's a difference between saying that we are the best and then we have the best process.
But even still, it's showing that we are superior, even though we know it's the best. But still, if you speak to the people in the other religions, they'll think exactly the same way.
No, what I'm saying is, I understand your point,
but in terms of discussing with them, as soon as you say this is the best, that's exactly how they're thinking about theirs, so it's really not going to get anywhere. If they're open, most people aren't even open. They don't even want to hear, because he thinks he's the best, so why does he want to even hear about anything? So then if you do, you just try to express to them the merits of what we do. What is good about what we do, that's all. There's not much else you can do anyways. Okay. So, we'll begin with verse 33 and go to verse 40. Okay. For human society, constantly thinking of how to earn money and apply it for sense gratification brings about the destruction of everyone's interests. When one becomes devoid of knowledge in devotional service, he enters into species of life like those of trees and stones.
Jnana or knowledge means to understand one's constitutional position, and vijnana refers to practical application of that knowledge in life. In the human form of life, one should come to the position of jnana and vijnana. But despite this great opportunity, if one does not develop knowledge and practical application of knowledge through the help of a spiritual master and the shastra, in other words, if one misuses this opportunity, then in the next life he is sure to be born in a species of non-moving living entities. Non-moving living entities include hills, mountains, trees, plants, etc. This stage of life is called punyatam or mukhyatam. Namely, making all activities to zero. Philosophers who support stopping all activities are called sunyavadi. By nature's own way, our activities are to be gradually diverted to devotional service. But there are philosophers who, instead of purifying the activities, try to make everything zero, or void of all activities. This lack of activity is represented by the trees and the hills. This is a kind of punishment inflicted by the laws of nature. If we do not properly execute our mission of life in self-realization, nature's punishment will render us inactive by putting us in the form of trees and hills. Therefore, activities directed towards sense gratification are condemned herein. One who is constantly thinking of activities to earn money and gratify the senses is following a path which is suicidal. Factually, all human society is following this path. some way or other, people are determined to earn money or get money by begging, borrowing or stealing, and applying that for sense gratification. Such a civilization is the greatest obstacle to the path of self-realization.
What do you think?
It's an eye-opener for everyone. Self-realization is the most important thing. And if you lose that opportunity in human life, we are gone forever. Three species over there.
Any other points?
Question, Prabhupada. If you think that you will become stone, it means a dirt, how a living entity conditioned soul has to maintain its identity, no? So, but still, we don't know consciousness, then how to understand this, what Prabhupada is saying about that?
There are some mountains and some stones that do have living entities living within them. Some. Prabhupada does mention it in his book sometimes.
Prabhupada uses the word life stone. Does he say literally stone? It is life grown up things.
Yeah, but why would he say stone? Why would he say trees? And he does mention in some purpose, he mentions that there are mountains that have living entities in the mountain itself. It's actually a point. He does mention it. And he does mention sometimes that there are stones. So I don't know which particular stones they are. It's not every stone. Not every single stone. But there are some. And there are some mountains which have living entities within them also. Any other points? Yeah, not all of them. Not all of them. It's not like every single, but some of them do have living entities living within them. It is described.
Anything else?
This is taking back. Prabhupada is making a comment related to Charvaka. He was the person who picked up the beg, borrow, or steal and enjoy your life. Who knows what happens after that? And for them, going to become ash. That was his famous statement.
Anything else?
Human beings should not be different, but everything is going to be able to get the self-realization, because human form of life is not utilized for self-realization and progressing forward, and rather than that people use and go backwards into such forms of life that they are different, and either they are not utilizing your intelligence.
So, when one misuses the human form of life, one regresses in consciousness. Right? And when you regress in consciousness, then you take birth in a lower species, which is appropriate to your consciousness. So we see that not all of human society is progressing. Sometimes there is a modern philosophy that everyone is simply progressing. Right? All of us are going forward. But obviously we're not going forward, because you see different people are not progressing in their consciousness. So according to your bhav, yam yam, bhavi smaram, bhavam, bhav means your consciousness at the time of death, what you remember, then that is what you will become. So those who regress their consciousness, then they become something lower. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that by activity and by philosophy, you can regress your consciousness. Sometimes people act in a very low state of consciousness. So by acting in a low state of consciousness, then one leads to a lower birth. Just like some people, then they only perform materialistic activity. So if you only perform materialistic activity, then you will get a birth which suits that activity which you're most attached to. Just like the bears can sleep for 6 months a year. So if you're too much in tamagun, too much attached to sleeping, then get a sleep which gives you the opportunity to fulfill your desire properly. And then you can sleep properly. So according to your desire, then you'll take birth in according to your desire in the particular species. So Prabhupada says by action and also by philosophy. If you try to nullify everything and say that everything is simply material and therefore false, and you nullify everything and say, well, all activity is false, so therefore I should do nothing. That's shunyavad. This is impersonalistic philosophy. Therefore I say that everything is false, therefore I will not do anything. I will simply cease to act. So if you act like that, if that is your philosophy, that will also bring you to that kind of a birth. Just like it describes sometimes that the impersonalists, someone who does not believe that there is anything but light, there's no form, there's just light, then sometimes these impersonalists, because they want to nullify activity and become one with the light, they take birth as trees. And then there's a tree, what does a tree do? What do trees do? Yeah, true. Well, what does a tree do? Yeah, a tree is always trying to find the light. That's all a tree does. He's just reaching up to the light. Like that. So this is someone who is an impersonalist. He says there is no activity, there is only light, then sometimes they take birth as trees. Okay, you say there's no activity, then have no activity. You say there is only light, then try to reach the light. So that's what they do. Sometimes it's the birth they take. So if you act according to your karma or according to your jnana, your philosophy, if you become absorbed in this impersonal ceasing of activity, then this is the birth that you can take. You can regress to a much lower birth. Now Prabhupada also points out later in the purport that basically he summarizes that money is simply a means to an end. In modern society, money has become God. So it is the ultimate goal of life. People think the more money I have, the more I will become successful. Just like we gave the saying many times we've mentioned, that one of the richest men on the earth, his name was Donald. Duck. No, not Duck. Donald Trump. Donald Trump. So he's one of the richest men on the earth. He made a very famous saying. He said, "He who dies with the most toys wins." And so this is the goal of life. They just think you just get as much as you can, acquire as much as you can. The richer you are, the more money you have, the more assets you have, the more commodities you have, then you are successful. Right? And then die. And then you won, because you have the most. But it means nothing like that. So Prabhupada says money is just a means to an end. Right? In Vaishnava philosophy, simply money we have to keep body and soul together. That's enough. Right? We don't get concerned about getting more and more money. Because it doesn't give happiness to the soul. As we mentioned last night, actually, those who are in the renounced order of life, they renounce material possessions. Because they realize there is no happiness in these things. And they simply give themselves to Krishna. So as householders, we have to accumulate something to keep our body and soul together, to keep our wife and our children and our home and like that. Just like we know the famous story of the brahmana who wanted two sets of kopas. So he got two sets of kopas. And then what happened? Mouse came and began to eat the kopa. So then he thought, now I need the cat. So then he got the cat to keep the mouse away. But then the cat was always making noise at night because it was hungry. So then he had to get a cow to get the milk to feed the cat. And then he thought, now I have to get a wife to milk the cow. And then it went on and on and on. So then what did he do? He gave up his second set of tokens. He said, better I just live simple. This is a material world. As soon as you get one thing, then you need. What is that verse in the Bhagavatam? Deha pacha kalatradishu atma sanyesh vasatswapi. Deha, from your body. Deha. Then we think kalatra. Kalatra means we need a wife or I need a husband. Right? And then you get apacha. Apacha means expansions, children. Then adishu. Adishu means all the paraphernalia. And as all Bhagavatam says, it is fallible soldier. Atma sanyesh vasatsvapi. It is asad. Fallible soldiers, which does not protect you at the time of death. So this is the trap of the material world. So the Kumaras are saying here, don't get caught up in sense gratification. Just have enough money to keep your body and soul together. That is better. It's actually better. Any points?
The story is for, I think, copy now from Patarko from my end.
That's Telugu.
Telugu is very close related to Sanskrit, so that's the same.
Any other points?
Just a question for me. As Pradhan has said, this human birth is very rare. Not many people are interested in spiritual advancement. There is no balance, materialist and spiritualist. Most of the people are influenced, and people are not even interested to know about these topics. Why is that, even though it is so rare, after many, many births, you get this, there's no balance at all. Not many people are interested in spiritual progress. They're just into sense gratification.
Why is that?
Because even though it is a rare, human birth is very rare, still they are not able to, after getting to this platform as well, again they are going into the sense gratification.
Because of the association, because you get born now in Kali Yuga, and what is the society doing? And society is just absorbed in sense gratification, so everyone thinks that is the goal. There's nothing more than that. If you get born in the more fortunate time, then you can associate with sadhus, and then they can help to elevate your consciousness. But unless there's a strong government keeping people away from sense gratification, and there are brahmanas to guide people, then society becomes lost, and that's what we see these days. You take birth as a human being, but practically you're lost. Okay? Unless you get very good association. Any other point?
The Malkish Maharaj asked the same question. That they are offering such a good product, but nobody is interested. Then Prabhupada said, getting a devotional service is like buying gold. So, a person who is selling gold, if you just look at the vegetable shops, there are too many people out there, and he said, look, there are so many people, I should go and sell my gold there. Then they said, okay, come and get 24 carat gold. The person says, I don't have money to buy 24 carat. What to speak of 24 carat gold? So it requires a certain degree of piety to appreciate what the devotional service has got to offer.
Anything else?
So in Vedic, at the time of marriage also, the pujari who performs, who conducts the Vedic rites, he just says dharma prakama moksha. Only the four aspects he tells the person when they're moving around the fire sacrifice. He doesn't say anything beyond that, and people think that was dharma lessons. So therefore that's ingrained into the minds of people even at that stage. Well, this is what you are likely to do. And therefore he says that you are going to stay with your partner all through the life in order to provide these things.
Those who strongly desire to cross the ocean of nescience must not associate with the modes of ignorance, for hedonistic activities are the greatest obstructions to realization of religious principles, economic development, regulated sense gratification, and at last, liberation.
The four principles of life allow one to live according to the religious principles, to earn money according to one's position in society, to allow the senses to enjoy the sense of death according to the regulation, and to progress along the path of liberation from the material attachment. As long as the body is there, it is not possible to become completely free from all these mental concepts. It is not, however, that himself in the slaughterhouse, the butcher certainly gets money easily, but such a business is not based on religious principles. Similarly, there are many nice open gratification and such of course allowed in married life. But prostitution is prohibited because all our activities are ultimately aimed at liberation, at freedom from the clutches of material existence. Similarly, although the government may license liquor shops, this does not mean that liquor shops should be opened unrestrictedly and illicit liquor smuggled. Licensing is meant for restricting. No one has to take a license for sugar, wheat or milk because there's no need to restrict these things. In other words, it is advised that one not act in a way that will obstruct the regular process of advancement in spiritual life and liberation. The Vedic process of sense gratification is therefore planned in such a way that one can economically develop and enjoy sense gratification and yet ultimately attain liberation. Vedic civilization offers one knowledge in the Shastra, and if we live regulated life under the direction of Shastras and Guru, all our material desires will be fulfilled. At the same time, we will be able to go forward to liberation.
Mm. Any points here?
Regulation is very important. In this case, from the government authorities, for example, liquor shops and other activities, they should not be, they should be restricted. Unlike the good thing, for example, growing vegetables and other things, they are good and there does not need any restriction. So, the good thing in the Vedic system is we go through all this process, but still at the end we attain the liberation. So,
this is one question regarding the regulation that Gopal is telling me. License in the class of a liquor, very much so. What Gopal is mentioning is unrestricted selling obligation not be so. Is it other way, like, can you say that Gopal is trying to explain liquor can be sale on with the license?
Seems like he's saying it in this purport, but I think there's other purports where he says that it should be, it should not be there. So I don't know why he says it, because he says the brothels, they should be closed down, but then he says the liquor shop should be regulated. He says the slaughterhouse should be closed, so I don't know why he says in this purport like that. But other places he says it should be stopped. Because then in other places he said that there can be some government-run brothels as well. He mentions that. So there's different places where he's mentioning different things. So I'm not sure why he's mentioning different things. Any other points? The Vedic system is that we should satisfy our material desires in a regulated fashion. Not that it should be unregulated. Sense gratification. Otherwise one becomes dvipada pashu. One becomes a two-legged animal. Because animals, even animals actually are regulated. Just like if they want to mate, if they want to procreate, they have their seasons. It's not that the animals just act in any way, but they act seasonally. Whereas sometimes human beings become lower than animals because they just want to fulfill their desires in an unregulated way. Any time, any place, and then we can try to satisfy our desires. Whereas the Vedic system is that one must regulate one's desires. Material desires are not prohibited. Prabhupada says as long as you have a material body, you will have material desires. You cannot just simply give up your material desires. They will not go away automatically. Because there are desires within this body. Just like we like to taste nice things. Now we like to taste nice food stuff. So Prabhupada said, then regulate that desire. How do we regulate that desire?
There are things we eat
Yeah, first you have to give it to Krishna. You want to take something nice, but you have to offer it to Krishna. That is regulation. Not that you just cook something and then eat it as quickly as you can. But rather, you have to offer it to Krishna first. Regulate, control your senses. The Vedic civilization is based upon sense control. As Prabhupada mentioned last night, one must become a Goswami, a master of the senses. How do you master your senses? By regulating it. Not that I will just have sense gratification. So this is the Vedic system. So, Prabhupada says that in the Vedic system, one fulfills his material desires. This is important. If you do not fulfill your material desires, right, then when you get to old age, then you'll be contemplating all the things that you did not have. Just like one devotee was telling me today that in one of Devamrita Swami's ashrams over in New Zealand, then they have Brahmacharini ashram, Brahmachari ashram. And then one of the devotees, she'd been practicing Brahmacharini life for a long time, maybe nearly 10 years or something, which is a long time actually for a woman, not to get married. Right? So she was suppressing that desire. Right? But she was fine. She was going on doing lots of service, very enthusiastic. But then she had some mental, physical breakdown because the desire was being suppressed. So it's very important that we fulfill our material desires. Right? If you have material desire, they must be fulfilled. If you don't fulfill them, then it will become problematic for you in the future. And we see the example in so many ways, like in the Bhagavatam, the famous example is Salvari Muni. He was not following the Bhakti Marg, but he was following the path of renunciation. So he went underneath the water, right, and he was away from all sense gratification, but when he saw two fish copulating, then he became disturbed in the mind and he came out again, and then he went and to fulfill his material desires. So material desires should not be repressed. But material desires must be regulated. That is the Vedic system, not to repress. That is artificial. If you artificially repress, then they will come up and they will cause problems in the psychology in the future. You'll have mental and physical problems. Just like a lot of the diseases which people have these days, all sorts of diseases, a lot of them are coming from the mind. When the mind is not settled, when it is not peaceful, it will cause, according to Ayurveda, it will cause ill health within the body. So you see a lot of people these days have diseases. It's connected to their psychology because they have repressed desires or they over too much sense gratification. Like that. So this is not the Vedic system. The Vedic system is regulation of desire. Like that. So fulfill your material desires in a regulated way and then ultimately attain liberation. Yeah? Become liberated from the material cycle of birth and death altogether. That is our goal. So therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that in Kali Yuga, Grihastha Ashram is very good. Because in Kali Yuga, you follow Grihastha Ashram. You fulfill your material desires, and then gradually you become less and less attached to the material world. That should be coming as time goes by. Not that you are feeling more and more attached as time goes by. But your attachment to the material, your material attachments and your material relationships, that should be coming less. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that you should see your wife, you should see your husband, you should see your children as devotees. That is the liberated platform. You should see the family members as devotees. Actually, that is the liberated platform. Not that you necessarily renounce them, but you just see them differently. Instead of seeing them as objects of sense gratification or objects of my pleasure, rather you see them objects of Krishna's pleasure. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, let me maintain my wife, my children, my home, right, as a service to you, Krishna. That is the mood of the devotee. Let me do this as a service to Krishna. Bring the children up nicely. Bring the family up nicely. Maintain them nicely. Why? For Krishna's satisfaction. Okay. Any points?
One thing that comes to my mind straight away, about the way Vedic wisdom uses take out the emotion in a very nice way with the celebration of Holi. Because I remember when I was young, I used to play Holi in different colors, and so once in a year get that out of you. When I came here, there was no contact, and I saw people coloring their hair differently and putting different colors everywhere. In some sense, I feel that because I already gone through that once in a year for so many years playing Holi, so I don't feel like doing this again, and they start their own ways, like coloring hair and putting some different color. That's what I feel. But Holi takes away that type of environment again. This is just one aspect how nicely we can do this thing.
Any other points?
I think regulation is there in all cultures, including Chinese culture, because recently China, they celebrated their New Year, and I was asking my students, what do you do on this day? They said that the most important thing we do is we don't eat non-veg on that day. That's the only day in India that we don't eat non-veg. The rest of the day we eat, so that's the restriction for us on that day.
Something is there. At least something is there.
One thing.
Yeah, in every culture we find that situation. In Islam culture they do restriction. In Christianity they do the restriction. So these days, I was asking my students, what did you do during the Easter time? Have you been to church? And almost every student was laughing at me. They said that, church, what is that? That's the way they were talking.
Anything else?
Just to add on this point, what Prabhu was saying. I have a colleague at work, she's a Greek. And the Easter time she was fasting, I asked, were you not eating? He said, no, I'm fasting. Then he said, something on your mouth, you need to eat. I said, I just had tuna on the day. He said, you fast for that. He said, tuna is fine, there's no problem.
Yeah, because they don't eat red meat. That's their restriction.
So fasting is not total fasting, it's red meat.
They're fasting from red meat, that's all they're fasting. Yeah, I remember when I was growing up then on Good Friday, then we would not eat red meat. We only eat fish or chicken. That was our restriction. So it's not very elevated, but it's something.
In my country actually they fast, they don't take even oil, they will take only boiled, for example, beans or something, they won't even put oil in fat. 40
days before
Easter.
Yeah.
My parents, my grandparents, you know,
they
do this.
Yeah, it's good. At least
some. For Christmas, they will never eat anything, meat, not even eggs, nothing, not even oil. They won't put the oil, also they consume like some oil or rich and fatty.
Yeah.
On Christmas. And I remember they will put the hay on the fork and they will share the bread and everything like in Jesus' time.
Where's the farm or something?
But nowadays they're using it on other ways. I remember my colleagues and my friends, they know like, okay, fine, there's only 8 or 9 days of Navrata, they can't touch this alcohol and meat. So they, to fulfill those 8 days, they have their like 1 week before that they will eat like anything, and 1 week after that particular thing they will eat like anything. So it's almost more than stopping in those 8 days too.
It's like the Muslims in Ramadan, and they cannot eat from sunrise to sunset. So then when I was in Africa a few years ago, then as soon as the sun went down and they had one meal. And then at 12 o'clock at night they had another meal, and then just before the sun came up they had another meal. So it's not so. Not so restricted. Okay.
Where is the description of the Kumarin?
Ninth canto. Out of the four principles, namely religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation, liberation has to be taken very seriously. The other three are subject to destruction by the stringent laws of nature, death. Jamuna Lila, can you read that?
Moksha or liberation has to be taken very seriously, even at the sacrifice of the other three items. As advised by Sutta Goswami in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, religious principles are not based on success in economic development. Because we are very attached to sense gratification, we go to God, to the temple or churches for some economic reason. Then again, economic development does not mean sense gratification. Everything should be adjusted in such a way that we attain liberation. Therefore, in this verse, liberation, moksha, is stressed. The other three items are material and therefore subject to destruction. Even if somehow we accumulate a great bank balance in this life and possess many material things, everything will be finished with death. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that death is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who ultimately takes away everything acquired by the materialistic person. Foolishly, we do not care for this. Foolishly, we are not afraid of death, nor do we consider that death will take away everything acquired by the process of dharma, artha and kama. By dharma or pious activities, we may be elevated to the heavenly planet, but this does not mean freedom from the clutches of birth, death, old age and disease. The purpose is that we can sacrifice our interests in Kraivarya, religious principles, economic development and sense gratification, but we cannot sacrifice the cause of liberation. Regarding liberation, it is stated in Bhagavad Gita 4.9, Yakva Devam Punar Janma Naiti. Liberation means that after giving up this body, one does not have to accept another material body. To the impersonalist, liberation means merging into the existence of impersonal Brahma. But factually that is not moksha, because one has to again fall down into this material world from that impersonal position. One should therefore seek the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engage in his devotional service. That is real liberation. The conclusion is that we should not stress pious activities, economic development and sense gratification, but should concern ourselves with approaching Lord Vishnu in his spiritual planet, of which the topmost is Golok Vrindavan, where Lord Krishna lives. Therefore, this Krishna consciousness movement is the greatest gift for persons who are actually desiring liberation.
Any interesting points?
That was one of the main theme of Bhujan Prabhu's retreat. He mentioned in one of his lectures that embodied soul should consider itself as small and insignificant so that he can take shelter. If both these conditions simultaneously are not fulfilled, then he won't be very keen on taking shelter. So, small and insignificant, that's how
any other points?
Is there any example to say that in spiritual beings into impersonal realm, they fell down into the material world again?
Prabhupada says it more than once in his books. So.
Any example?
Haven't met anyone.
Huh?
I haven't met anyone. There's no pastime. The Prabhupada mentions it quite a few times, so it means it must happen. Okay. Anything else? So then Prabhupada mentions that we should become very interested in liberation. Actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says we should be interested in the fifth Purushartha, as opposed to Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha. He says then, Prema Pumata Maham. The great goal of human life is actually friends. This is the verdict or the conclusion of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Even liberation, it says, Bilva Mangala Thakur says that the four goals of the Vedic knowledge, Dharma, Artha, Karma and Moksha, they are simply maidservants at the house of bhakti. So when you focus on prema or on bhakti or devotion to Krishna, then automatically you'll get the results of Dharma, of Artha, of Karma and of Moksha. Automatically you'll be given. Because they are subservient to bhakti. So Lord Chaitanya says actually the ultimate goal and the conclusion of the Bhagavatam is prema. That is the goal of human life. Like that. So then if you get prema, then automatically you will get the ultimate goal, which Prabhupada mentions in this purport, which means you'll go to Goloka Vrindavan. That will be your final destination. Automatically you'll get that. If you develop bhakti or pure devotion to Krishna, automatically you will go to Goloka. You don't have to desire it separately. Automatically you'll go. Just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, do not try to see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna will see you. So that should be the meditation of the devotee. We try to act in such a way that Krishna will see us. Then automatically you will get the goal of life. Automatically you'll be able to go to Goloka Vrindavan. You don't have to desire this separately. Automatically you'll be taken. So this is what Prabhupada is pointing us to in the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is what the Bhagavatam points us to. Okay, so. Any points here? We've set this blessing in different states of higher life, distinguishing them from lower states of life. But we should know that such distinctions exist only in relation to the interchange of the modes of material nature. Actually, these states of life have no permanent existence, for all of them will be destroyed by the Supreme Controller.
No, material existence, they accept a higher form of life as a blessing and a lower form as a curse. This distinction of higher and lower only exists as long as the different material qualities not interact. In other words, by our good activities, we are elevated to the higher planetary systems or to a higher standard of life. Good education, beautiful body, etc. These are the results of pious activities. Similarly, by impious activities we remain illiterate, get ugly bodies, a poor standard of living, etc. But all these different states of life are under the laws of material nature, through the interaction of the qualities of goodness, passion and ignorance. However, all these qualities will cease to act at the time of the dissolution of the entire cosmic manifestation. The Lord therefore says in Bhagavad Gita 8.16, Abrahma Bhuvano Loko Punar Avartino Arjuna Mamukte Upatyatu Kamseya Punar Janmana Visite. Even though we elevate ourselves to the highest planetary system by the scientific advancement of knowledge or by the religious principles of life, great sacrifices and fruitive activities, at the time of dissolution this higher planetary system and life on them will be destroyed. In this verse, the words Isha, Vidyam, Sita, Sutam indicate that all such blessings will be destroyed by the Supreme Controller. We will not be protected. Our bodies, either in this planet or in another planet, will be destroyed. And again, we will have to remain for millions of years in an unconscious state within the body of Mahavishnu. And again, when the creation is manifested, we have to take birth in different species of life and begin our activities. Therefore, we should not be satisfied simply by a promotion to the higher planetary system. We should try to get out of the material cosmic manifestation, go to the spiritual world and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is our highest achievement. We should not be attracted by anything material, higher or lower, but should consider them all on the same level. Our real engagement should be in inquiring about the real purpose of life, and rendering devotional service to the Lord. Thus, we will be eternally blessed in our spiritual activities, full of knowledge and bliss.
Thank you. Any points here?
In the material world, like Prabhupada is saying in the first few lines that everything is measured by how we are doing, the distinction of higher and lower exists. Like higher form of life means it's a blessing and lower form of life means it's a curse or it's because of that. I think Sudama says to his wife when they had to have a really poor answer with his lecture, that he was very poor, and I think he was explaining that for me still everything is auspicious. Poverty is not an auspicious thing because I'm still remembering the Supreme Personality. So any situation where you are able to render service and remember the Supreme Personality of God, it is auspicious, no matter materially how your situation may be.
Question. The material planets or universes are coming out from Mahavishnu. Where the spiritual planets coming from?
They're already there. They're eternal, so they don't come from anywhere. They're already there.
Actually, when Thakur commented on Bhagavatam Krishna, he actually explains from which potency what gets manifested from all this effect of Chit and Ananda, or Sandini, Pradhyumna, and Samadhi Shakti. All
these gets manifested. Yeah. The spiritual planets are eternal. They always exist. So.
This is more question. At the time of annihilation, merging into the body of Mahavishnu, how is it different from the first annihilation? At that time also you are merging into the body. So, the time of annihilation, you are merging into the body of Mahavishnu.
Because when the universe is destroyed, all the universes are destroyed, they all go back in the body of Mahavishnu, and everyone goes into a sleep, like a deep state of sleep, for millions and millions and millions of kalpas. Millions. And then, when he breathes out again, and all the universes come out, everyone goes into those universes, and they wake up and they begin to perform their karma, and material activities. So it's just like a sense of sleep. Whereas in personal Brahman, when you merge into the Brahma Jyoti, it's not a sleep, it's consciousness, but you realize Sat, or the eternal feature of the Lord. So you realize I am eternal, I am spirit, Aham Brahmasmi. So you don't lose consciousness. You don't lose awareness. Whereas when you go into the body of Mahavishnu, then you become unconscious.
So the cause of falling from personal Brahma is because there is no bliss over there?
Yeah. Because you want something to do. Right? And you look down and you say, oh, they're having the Sunday feast, I'm missing out. And then you put that in. Any other point? Okay, we'll read the third paragraph. Bala Prabhu, can you read the third?
Regulated human civilization promotes dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. In human society, there must be a religion. Without religion, human society is only an animal society. Economic development and sense gratification must be based on religious principles. When religion, economic development, and sense gratification are registered, liberation from this material birth, disease, birth, death, old age, and disease are assured. In the present age, however, there is no question of religion and liberation. People have taken interest only in economic development and sense gratification. Therefore, despite sufficient economic development all over the world, living in human society has become almost animalistic. When everything becomes grossly animalistic, dissolution takes place. This dissolution is to be accepted as Isha Vidya. The Lord's so-called blessing is of economic development and sense gratification will be conclusively dissolved by destruction. At the end of this Kali Yuga, the Lord will appear as the incarnation of Kalki, and his holy and only business will be to kill all human beings on the surface of the globe. After that killing, another golden age will begin. We should therefore know that our material activities are just like a childish play. Children may play on the beach, and the father will sit and watch this childish play and construction of buildings with sand, the construction of walls and so many things. But finally the father will ask the children to come home. Then everything is destroyed. Persons who are too much addicted to the childish activities of economic development and sense gratification are sometimes especially favored by the Lord when he destroys their constructions of these things.
So any points here?
Very nice example. You make castle in the sand, and so when you come home, like that, the material world is familiar, everything is gone underwater.
So Prabhupada is mentioning in these two paragraphs that, first of all, the higher and lower states of existence are all destroyed in due course of time. Sometimes we think, oh, this is better, that is worse. Because the reactions of the material modes of nature. We think, oh, that is a higher state of existence, that is a lower state. But, as Prabhupada points out in the purport, in due course of time, everything is finished. So what is actually ultimately better or worse? Of course, living in Sattva-gun is better than living in Raja-gun or Tamagun, because at least from Sattva-gun, you have more opportunity to take to bhakti. You're more ready to take to devotional service. But still, it is at the end of the day, when you go back into the body of Mahavishnu, then ultimately nothing was achieved. So this is all temporary and limited, to think that this is better, this is worse. It's simply illusion. Now, in the second paragraph, Prabhupada explains that when society becomes too materialistic, then everything is dissolved once again. Right? When society becomes too absorbed in materialistic activity, then everything simply becomes destroyed by Kalki Avatar. In 427,000 years from now, the Lord will come again to earth in the form of Kalki. He will ride on his horse. What is the horse's name? Devadatta. Devadatta, a white horse. He rides on a white horse across the earth, and whoever is remaining, he kills them with his sword, and as he rides across the earth, then the wherever he rides, then whatever he leaves behind him, that becomes Satyayuga once again. And Kali Yuga becomes cleansed, and then the world begins again from the Golden Age. So this is the cycle that goes on again and again and again in the material world. Whenever people become too impious, then everything degrades too much, then the Lord purifies everything and lifts everyone up and then elevates their consciousness once again. Any points here?
I was just wondering, why the Lord has to come for destroying life? It can be destroyed by his wish.
Yeah, but
there's so many that natural disasters that can destroy the life. So why he has to come just to do that?
Because then by his personal presence everything becomes purified again, and then Satyayuga comes once again. But he can do anything, so then why should he do anything?
All those people will be liberated because they don't have Satyayuga.
Yeah. Then it's like he performs all of his leelas, all of his pastimes. You can say, why does he do anything? We can say, he is up around, so why does he dance with the gopis? He's up in the room, he's already satisfied, so why does he need gopis to dance with? So why does he do any lila, any pastime? Because it gives him pleasure out there. And it gives the devotees pleasure. Imagine if you got to the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam. And then say Kali Yuga had finished 432,000 years. And then Krishna just snapped his fingers and everything just went back to normal again. So what is better? What is more interesting to read? It's more interesting that he comes and performs some lila or some pastime like that. It becomes more attractive. Like that, so.
The way I understand that the Lord comes in this world to free the devotees. But at the end of Kali Yuga, there will be hardly any devotees accepted.
No, because then Satyuga comes, and then there's so many devotees after Satyuga begins once again. So if he does not come, then there's no Satyuga. If there's no Satyuga, there's no opportunity for people to become self-realized.
So he converts bad people into good.
No, he kills them. But then it's said that the world becomes repopulated with paramahamsas. It describes in Satyuga, everyone is Paramahamsa in the beginning of Satyuga.
Also, in Bhagavatam, there are some people or one person, I'm not sure who it was, if he's still waiting somewhere in India, maybe in mountains to get to the end of Kali Yuga, Krishna, Kalki Yogi. I don't know, no, it wasn't Hanuman. I read somebody in the books, in the Srimad Bhagavatam.
They get liberation, yeah. What that liberation is, we're not maybe 100% sure, but they will get liberation. Auspiciousness. Maybe they'll go back to the spiritual world. Prabhupada says that on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, when Arjuna killed all of the warriors, then the last thing they saw was Krishna. Because they were looking at Arjuna's chariot, they saw Krishna. And Prabhupada said those who were not envious of Krishna, then they went back to Vaikuntha. Those who were envious, then they merged into the Brahma Jyoti. So they'll get some sort of liberation.
So at least they have done something good,
karma.
Just lucky.
So you can elaborate on the last sentence.
What is it?
Says persons who are too much addicted to childish activities of economic development and sensitive education are sometimes especially favored by the Lord when they destroy their constructive system. How is it that people who are so addicted can be especially still favored by the Lord to be given the liberation?
It means that if they get that mercy, then that is very special mercy because they don't necessarily deserve it. So when someone who does not deserve mercy gets it, then it's said to be special consideration or special favor. Prabhupada's saying it like that. What's that? What's that?
Causeless mercy.
Yeah, you can say it like that. Special mercy or causeless mercy.
That's the next point about being addicted to economic development. People who may have a strong faith in God, but they're still attached to that thing. And so their path is obscure or like impeded because of that activity. And that's why, I don't know, it's just a point. Is that why Krishna is not merciful at those times? Okay. They're not completely demonic and still have a strong faith. Because a lot of people, it's just an insight, I see a lot of people who are materialistic, but at the same time have a strong belief in God, but they're still addicted to material activities and economic development.
I'm just, I don't know, maybe Krishna has special mercy for those types of people too.
Yeah, it just means that then people who are not putting a lot of effort in, somehow if they get some special mercy, it's considered causal at all. Just like sometimes we don't do very much, but we get some special mercy, so we see that as being causeless mercy or special consideration or something like that. Okay, we'll keep going because we want to finish this section. We'll go up to verse 37. So Nakamar advised the king, "Therefore, my dear king, Prithu, try to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is living within everyone's heart along with the individual soul. In each and every body, either moving or not moving, the individual souls are fully covered by the gross material body and subtle body made of the life air and intelligence." The Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests himself as one with the cause and effect within this body. But one who has transcended the illusory energy by deliberate consideration, which clears the misconception of a snake for a rope, can understand that the Paramatma is eternally transcendental to the material creation and situated in pure internal energy. Thus the Lord is transcendental to all material contamination. Unto him only must one surrender. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that the Mayavadis have this philosophy that we're at this time we are mistaking a rope for a snake. In other words, you think you look and you look at a piece of rope, but you think it is a snake. So then you become very fearful. So they say that is Maya. That is the definition of what this material energy is. We think that it is real, but actually, or we think it is one thing, but actually is an entirely different thing. Actually, they say it's a manifestation of Brahman. It is spiritual energy, but we think it is Maya, that is because of our illusion. And then, when you become liberated, then you realize, oh, this is all false, and now everything is one. So, it is correct only up until a certain point. The Vaishnavas also see the material energy like this. We understand that it is, we think it is one thing, but actually it is another thing. Actually, Prabhupada explains, as we discussed last night, that for a devotee, we see the material energy as spiritual. We don't see the material energy as matter. We see it as Krishna's energy. And when you see it as Krishna's energy, it becomes re-spiritualized. Just like these chairs, you can use these chairs to sit down and have some mundane event. Or use these chairs to sit down and you have some spiritual event. So then that same energy, that same material object, it becomes spiritualized. Everything becomes purified. So it's a state of consciousness. So this is how to liberate oneself from the material energy. By seeing everything as being a product of Krishna's energy and using it in his service. And then one becomes liberated. Instead of becoming bound by the material energy. So devotees who are always engaged in the service of the toes of the lotus feet of the Lord can very easily overcome hard-knotted desires for fruitive activities, because this is very difficult. The non-devotees, the jnanis and yogis, although trying to stop the waves of sense gratification, cannot do so. Therefore, you are advised to engage in the devotional service of Krishna, the son of Vasudeva. The ocean of nescience is very difficult to cross because it is infested with many dangerous sharks. Although those who are non-devotees undergo severe austerities and penances to cross that ocean, we recommend that you simply take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are like boats for crossing the ocean. Although the ocean is very difficult to cross, by taking shelter of his lotus feet, you will overcome all dangers. So this analogy of the ocean is given in many places in the Bhagavad Gita, and it is also given in the Mukunda Mala Stotra, which was written by... Maharaj Kulashekar. So he gives this analogy also. He says that this material world is like an ocean. And within the ocean, there are many sharks. And he describes the sharks as being members of our family. What's that?
Many religions.
Not in this particular analogy. Yeah. King Kolashaka says, your family members are like sharks. Okay. If they're not devotees. They are like sharks. Because simply they're just trying to take something out of you. Just like a shark is always trying to bite you. Right, and take something. Like that. So this is what the family members are like. They take as much of what they can from you until you die. And then when you're dead, you're better anyway, because then they get all your assets. Like that. So that is material culture. So King Kulashenka says then, how can you be peaceful in the material world? Just like you're in the ocean, you're drowning, and then you see the fin of the shark begin to circle you. Already you're being tossed around by all the waves and you're suffering so much, right? And you have no strength, no energy, and simply you are suffering in the ocean, and then suddenly a shark comes and your suffering increases. And then King Kulashekha, he says then finally, after going through all of that in the material world, then there is the whirlpool. The whirlpool sucks you down to the bottom of the ocean. And then what does he say is the whirlpool? Yeah, he said it is your wife. Is the whirlpool. Because he's a man. So it means all your husband. Right? Is the whirlpool. Right? Sucks you down into the material world. This is if the wife or the husband are not devotees. Now, if the wife or husband are not devotees, then they just simply bring you down to the material world. They drown you down into the ocean, deep within the ocean. But if they're devotees, then they liberate you. So, this example is given of the material ocean. It's very powerful. So then Prabhupada says in the end of the purport, he says the only way to become liberated from this material energy is that one must develop param jishtva nivartate. One must develop a higher taste in Krishna consciousness. Because when you have a taste in Krishna consciousness, then you lose your taste for the material energy. Even though you're in this material world, but you have no attachment to it. Just like one time the reporter in 1967, very early in our movement, he was interviewing Srila Prabhupada on the radio, and he said to Prabhupada, are you self-realized? Prabhupada said, yes. And he said, explain to us, what is self-realization? Prabhupada said, I can sit in a room of naked women and I am not affected. But you are affected. This is self-realization. So when one has a higher taste in Krishna consciousness, he does not become attracted to the material energy. But when one is materialistic in consciousness, then he becomes bewildered by the material energy. So therefore, when you become absorbed in the bliss of Krishna consciousness, even though you're in the material world, you have no attraction to it. So we'll stop here for tonight. And by Krishna's mercy, we'll see you all next week. We'll continue the chapter. This chapter is very long. Hopefully next week we'll finish it. Like that, because there's a lot of long verses in this chapter, a lot of long verses. So. Mukunda Mala Stotra. Mukunda Mala.